needed something in its place to say, well, what exactly is that, that kind of competency and graduation requirements? So there was...
Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters. Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime, on the internet, in your browser, WFPR.FM, and in the local Franklin Mass FM radio dial. Yeah, the dial with the knobs or the push buttons that you can preset to 102.9. That's the number. There was a school committee meeting this week, and we have a chance to recap the session with our school committee chair, Dave Callahan. Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Yeah, this is the last chalkboard chat episode of this school committee term. We had our last one on the 28th.
Yeah.
So I'm doing well.
Good. Kind of bittersweet because as part of it, and you're jumping ahead of our schedule a little bit, but there's a couple of people who have made good community contributions, not just on the school committee, and they're not coming back.
Yeah, it's obviously, you know, we had Vice Chair Dave McNeil and school committee member Aaron Gallagher had both said that they're not going to seek re-election. They have some amazing things that they're working on themselves, and so we had the opportunity to I mentioned that town council meeting, but give them their flowers, because they just Dave, he served on he came on board with me 4 years ago.
Sure.
And he's been on budget ever since and just done so much incredible work. And then Aaron joined us for this most recent term, and which has been now, I came on in the middle of COVID and with COVID, with masking, with so many, superintendent, leaving and search parties and all this stuff. But this last 2 years that Aaron was here for, with the reorganization and everything, was just, it was such a heavy lift every single week. Mm-hmm. And yet she kind of came at it with so much enthusiasm, brought amazing ideas. Like it wouldn't have been the same process without her.
No. And yet at the same time, in those last 2 years, she put a dream into brick and mortar.
Absolutely. The fact that she went, and I touched on this in my farewell speech to her, but that throughout all of this, this incredible hard work that was going on, she was also working with, to co-found and open the Franklin Children's Museum, which is just, it's wild. It is absolutely incredible that she was able to go and do that in the time frame that she did.
Right.
And I'm so incredibly proud of her, and I can't wait to see what she's going to do moving forward as well.
Yeah, and especially to the extent that it's the museum, there's educational aspects. We're not going to miss her. I mean, on the committee, yes, but in the community and education related, she's still playing in that role.
Absolutely, and I told her too. I'm keeping her phone number on in my contacts. Because as we kind of move forward, there's going to be plenty of times I'm going to try to pull her back in whenever possible.
Mm-hmm.
She's both of them have just left such an indelible mark on Franklin. Because Dave also he worked with the Franklin Education Foundation.
Yes,
and he was instrumental in being that bridge between as they were kind of closing and sunsetting.
Yeah,
to figure out what to do with those funds and with the creation of the Franklin Education Legacy Revolving Account that's now with the Franklin Public Schools. And so both of them just did so much amazing work on the school committee and just in the Franklin community as well.
Yep, I'll be looking forward to it. So the FEF has contributed bunches over the year. I think the last time I saw a total was in excess of 400,000. And now they've given, I think it's about 150 or so. So almost 600,000 in total. And it still goes on. So nothing wrong with that part.
No, and in a quick plug with them too, because with that, as we created that legacy, that town of Franklin and really anybody in general can still continue to make direct donations into that Franklin Education Legacy revolving account.
Right.
And it's right through UniPay. And so you can kind of follow this. Jana, our school business administrator, and Lucas and his team built an incredible website. So you can kind of go on, take a look at that website, see all the history of the FEF, and also see what this money is now going towards. and then continue to kind of make those donations to keep that program alive within Franklin as well.
Yep. Oh, goodness. And then you started the meeting. We skipping back a little bit. What a nice touch to recognize some pledge students of certain members, because respectfully, I mean, you all have lives and some of you have children and they miss you when you're at meetings.
Yeah. And so this was, you know, because it's, I mean, even at the last meeting, you know, my little guy had a flag football game that I wasn't able to attend. And there's so many of those sacrifices that, you know, there's at least whenever I kind of talk about pulling papers, it's a whole family-wide kind of conversation. Mm-hmm. And, but at the same time, you know, yeah, they're making a lot of those sacrifices as well when their moms and dads aren't at home because they're, you know, they're on TV, they're watching them, mm-hmm. or whatever the case is. So yeah, over the summer I had reached out and I was like, hey, let's kind of put a hold on this. I got this idea, mm-hmm. To invite all of the kids of school committee members to kind of come and be our pledge students so they can properly kind of get recognized for the sacrifices that they made to make this whole operation, you know, mm-hmm. really kind of work, to give us right. that grace to be away from them every other Tuesday. And so an email went out to the whole school committee members, and then we had a number of them say yes, and their kids were able to kind of come, be recognized, and say the Pledge of Allegiance. And I hope it's something that we'll be able to kind of continue that trend moving forward as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah, because, I mean, we've said it teasingly, and yet we all get big bucks for this, because volunteering, you know, it's just big bucks. So you need little recognitions here and there, so... Thank you for taking time to do that.
Absolutely. I'm happy to do so. And it was wonderful seeing the kiddos there, especially some of them. I know Al Charles had his, say two boys, but I mean, like they're grown men. They're growing. and it's just unbelievable, because when, you know, we came on 4 years ago, to think of where, you know, where my kids were.
Sure.
You know, and I mean, my little guy wasn't even in the Franklin education system at the time. Yep. Yep. And so, yeah, these kids grow up just way too quickly. But so it was great to be able to kind of to recognize them for what they've done for this community, too.
Yep, for sure. That gives us a pretty good segue as well into the policy first reading. So, yeah, they're continuing to grow day by day, leap by bound, and you're going to have graduation requirements defined and competency determinations defined for when they do come around to that.
Yeah. And because this specific policy, now that when last year the state of Massachusetts, you know, had the MCAS question on the ballot,
yeah, and ballot question so, turned over MCAS as a requirement. Yeah,
exactly. And so, but it that got turned over, but it needed something in its place to say, well, what exactly is that kind of competency and graduation requirements? So that came out in our first policy meeting. We kind of, Dr. Rogers and her team really did so much of the heavy lifting to kind of put this together, mm-hmm. but really just to say, all right, well, if MCAS isn't there, mm-hmm. there needs to be that, you know, other, you know, another bar. What is mm-hmm. that? So we drafted up this policy, and the way that also too, just for folks maybe just now kind of paying attention, or some individuals who signed up to run for school committee, that all of our policies, they'll get two reads. So it'll be drafted in policy, you know, voted out of policy with an approval to kind of then go to the full school committee for a first read, where everybody gets to put eyes on it, make some adjustments as we kind of had. Yep. And then at our next meeting, which will now be in the new term, those new seven members will take a look at it for the second read, make adjustments, questions, deliberate, and then vote to whether or not to approve mm-hmm. Those policies.
Yeah, or amend and then vote, however it works out, because I think there were some minor modifications, and I think thoughtful ones, in terms of adding some, in one case, some evergreenness, but also some, you know, more definitive measures around how you make the determinations.
Exactly. And to, you know, also, yeah, make it explicit as opposed to kind of pointing to the handbook. Mm-hmm. And so where people have to kind of, you know, flirt back and forth between one document or another. And so, so it was some great additions that were kind of added on. And then it'll come back for a second read on our November 18th meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that reminds me too, and that might be one of the items that you could get into in your potential new education segments, where the relationship between a policy, a procedure, and then the handbooks, the explanation, because, yeah, in many cases, respectfully so, you do need to look at the policy, but then the details are going to be, somewhere else. And if people miss that obviously could cause some problems.
No, that's fantastic, because when we when I was chair of the policy subcommittee, one of the first kind of like big milestones that we had was we really kind of rewrote the whole policy all about bullying and the reporting responsibilities and kind of what those setting all the expectations. And so that's where at the policy level, we're really setting the expectations and say, as a school committee, this is what we're expecting at
Correct.
all the different levels to kind of go and to
Right.
do, and how quickly they, in this case, need to be reported out. And then in turn, that then has the district working with all the different building principals at the different levels to go and say, all right, well, how are we going to build our procedures that meet all those expectations as laid out in the policy? And then the building principals themselves dictate the student handbook to make sure that that all kind of aligns and that goes out to the families and to the students. So, no, that's fantastic. And that educational piece too, this was something that came up two meetings ago now, from Al Charles, kind of really saying, hey, let's start to do something, maybe towards the top of the meeting, little 5-minute segments on a variety of educational things. Chapter
Sure.
7, hold harmless, how the policies work. And that we can kind of educate the community, and then also it's going to provide a great soundbite, so that way if something pops up on Facebook and people are like, I'm not really sure if this is accurate or not, well, here's a quick little 5-minute rundown of how hold harmless works and how
Right.
so folks can really kind of get the actual facts.
Yep, that makes sense, because I know from even my prior corporate background, it was always kind of a policy, then procedure, and detailed implementation instructions, etc. And those were handled at different levels because it made it easy to change. You were within the policy and you need to make sure of that. But then the process and procedures could get changed readily, to accommodate different circumstances without necessarily going back and changing the policy. So, yeah, makes sense. And you're making sense of it going forward too. So that's good. And then you get into the superintendent's goals, which in terms of alignment, clearly makes sense that his goals are in aligned with the overall district goals.
Yeah, and you can, which one, like those in those district goals, it was a great document. It's honestly one of the best district goal documents that I think I've seen in the 4 years that I've been on the school committee, because what he ended up doing was really having, as opposed to just an overall district kind of report out, every single department, including business and HR, IT, all kind of said, here's exactly what we're looking to do this school year. And then, yeah, and with his specific goals, he said, well, and here's how we're gonna, I'm align my goals are all in alignment with the district's strategic goals, which are all in alignment with the reorganization. And that's kind of like the big thing. It's there's been, over 2 years of planning to get to where we are now. And obviously, the systems and the really the budget as a zero-based budget was built and from the ground up. To with with all that planning and being like, all right, well, once this plane lands, here's where we're going to be, and here's how those schools are going to operate. But now the kind of focus, instead of just jumping on to the next kind of new thing, is to say, all right, you know what? We landed the plane. We built these systems. This is where we think that we were. Now, are there ways that we can kind of fine tune them? And
Right.
so I really kind of appreciated the fact that his goals are really just to kind of continue to look at everything that we did last year and to fine tune it and to kind of make it really just even better in the next school year as well.
For sure. That makes sense in terms of the alignment. And yeah, he's, and I agree, very much a systems and process oriented. And that's my alignment as well. So yeah, if you set up the system process and you build in enough of those, checks and balances and feedback loops, then once you get going, then that flywheel just kind of keeps turning.
Exactly, and that's and I mean, you know, I sometimes I've kind of joked with Lucas during some of our meetings about his love of systems. But the superintendent will always talk about these systems. But yeah, there's great benefits to working hard to establish properly working systems and to kind of fine-tune them to make them as effective and efficient as possible, because then those systems just run themselves, and you're able to kind of put that focus and energy into something new as we kind of look forward into the future.
Yeah, for sure. And then the last significant item before you get into your executive session, which we can't cover here until last revealed, but October 1 is always a marking date for DESE enrollment reporting. And the enrollment report came out, and oh, by the way, the demographic progressions are pretty darn close.
And it's also cool because I mentioned this at the town council meeting during that little the school committee update as well. But that when we s embarked on the redistricting efforts, one of the very first things, if not the first thing that we did, was to look to do f some projections and some forecasting of our enrollments. Obviously, the last thing we wanted to do was go through this entire process and then be like, oh, you know, by the way, we misjudged what the numbers were at, and all of a sudden this one's overcrowded, or this one's under, or whatever the situation is. And so we went with the Dr. Jerry McKibben, who has kind of worked with the Franklin schools and other schools for many years now, and kind of put those numbers, his projections for October 1, 2025, right up against the actual October 1, 2025 numbers. And so, and really be able to kind of, so folks can kind of look and say, all right, well, this, how did he do? And he did pretty well when you're kind of looking at it all across these different levels. And it's what's so helpful with that is that he also really projected out for the next 10 plus years. And so we're going to continue to do this every single year. So October 1, 26, you can anticipate the same thing with those projections right next to it, to just strengthen that confidence in the numbers. But ultimately, what the trends are showing is that the old kind of talking points of the Franklin Public Schools having declining enrollment is in the past now. You know, we're really at a point where those enrollment numbers have are stabilizing, and kind of will be so
Plateauing,
exactly. And so we'll kind of at, we reach this plateau, and we're going to stay there for a number of years before a slight uptick. But I hopefully a lot of folks hear that, because it's difficult when so many of those that's well, the enrollment's going, it's always enrollment's going down, well, why is the budget going up? And obviously there's many reasons why the budget's going up, and
including
Al brought up,
healthcare.
yeah, exactly, like, because we're the only department that manages our own health insurance. And so when health insurance kind of goes up by, you know, 14, that was one year, it was almost 18%, that hits us. Whereas in every other department, it's outside of their own operating budget. So to be able to take, you know, health insurance at 14%, when the vast majority of the schools is, it's a people business. It's staffing. It's not equipment or materials. So it makes it difficult to manage within 2.5%. And but and additionally, you know, Al was talking about unfunded mandates. That when we talk about like that, the MCAS policy, the fact MCAS is gone. So we had the new policy for the graduation requirements, and that there was an appeal process, and all of that used to be handled by the state. Well, now that's going to be passed down to us, and we're going to have to be able to have the staff available to kind of go through that.
Well, to
But
set up the
ultimately, like,
process and then the staff to actually manage it, however they do,
and that's not free, and nor did we receive any additional money from the state for that, like many other these unfunded mandates. But ultimately, at least we can say, well, it's no longer this downward enrollment trend. So hopefully everybody is hearing that message and understanding that. It's just so that way, there's plenty of stuff to talk about, but if we're going to talk about the schools, it would be lovely now to be able to talk about the actual numbers that we have and the trends that we have, and the enrollment numbers are showing that. Like you mentioned, is that plateauing of the numbers moving forward too?
And just stepping back a bit to the numbers that McKibben provided, he'd actually done it twice. His initial one were pre-2020 census, and then I think it was during that first redistricting, not the final one. Maybe it was the final one. I'm losing track as to which one it was. He redid the aspect of that to include the 2020 census numbers, which I think certainly helps contribute to his accuracy now because they're much closer to the reality that we're seeing.
Absolutely. And so, and yeah, and his, and even that, those pre-2020 census numbers too. I remember when I was, I think this is when I was first just kind of exploring the idea of school committee. They kind of did something very similar. And even then, his numbers were pretty on target. But yeah, so then we went back, to him, and, yeah, he was able to kind of go update it. And then it was, February of 2024. And so that's the report that we're now, using, and we'll continue to kind of, use that model moving forward too.
And while you're not scheduled or anticipating, because it's a once in a lifetime thing of redistricting again, at some point in time, as you get closer to that ninth and 10th year, getting another demographic update might be worthwhile to continue to prove that, oh, by the way, this is what's really happening.
Exactly. Yeah, we're still on target, but yeah, it definitely is that once in a generation. My hairline could not do this again. And so it was a lot of great work, but it was nice to know this is something that we can do and put to bed and move forward and build new systems that that we're working on now.
Well, thank you for taking time to recap. And thank you and your brethren for doing what they do. There is this thing called an election next week, and we'll find out who's sitting at the table after that.
There is, yeah, and so it'll be interesting, and I'll just implore anybody listening. Yeah, it's November 4th, to please go out and vote. Steve, I know you had very eloquent citizens' comments talking the fact that it's so rare to be able to break just 20% for local elections, and yet when you really get down to it, this is where I feel you have your dollar. You have the most impact on
The
how your
most
tax is being
control,
spent,
absolutely.
like 100%. And so the fact that it's habitually the least, attended election or lowest turnout, it's sad. It's a shame. Nancy DiNello has worked her butt off to make early voting such a breeze. I saw one of my friends kind of posted online that she was in and out under 10 minutes that when she went and did it. And but by the time that this kind of goes out, that might have been closed. But so polls are open at the high school, 6 to 8 p.m. Is that right?
6 a.m. to 8 p.m. Correct.
And so please go out and vote, get your sticker, and say hi. I'll be there.
I'll share a little nuance within that, because while the average is 20%, realistically, and this year could have been one of the years because it was a town council, excuse me, town clerk election, and she's voted on every 4 years. When there's been a competition for a town clerk, it actually is more 20 to 23% turnout. When she doesn't run or have no any competition, it's more like 12 to 15% for a turnout, which between the two averages to 20. So yeah, it's significant and disturbing, which is why I got a little passionate both at the school committee and then at the town council, making the same kind of comment that, hey, it is us folks. We need to get out and vote and talk to your friends and neighbors and get them out to do the same thing.
Exactly. And it's such an easy process. And also for folks too, they had emailed out all the candidates to kind of say, when it comes to parking, please, like the candidates are instructed to kind of park over at the middle school. So, and it's a half day over at the high school. So they're going to try to make like, parking should be, as easy as possible. So yeah, drive on, down Oak or up Panther Way, pull in, spend a couple of minutes to go and do your civic duty. And really, this is an amazing opportunity to put your mark on where you want the direction for both the schools and the town of Franklin moving forward. So I hope everybody goes and gets out there. And if you have any questions, obviously got my phone number. Give me a call.
Definitely. Well, thank you again for doing what you do. Good luck on Tuesday. And to the listeners, thank you for listening. Stay tuned. Hopefully, there'll be some more of these chalkboard chats in the new term. And a quick reminder, we do this because Franklin matters.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.